Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to today's show. This is yours truly, Mark Kohler, with my amazing co-host, Matt Sorensen, live.
Yeah, baby.
We're on some really high-quality sounding audio here. So.
Yeah, could you tell?
Okay, Matt, give the disclaimer. Yeah, give the disclaimer.
Yeah, I don't know how to say this, but the audio is going to suck because this is live. This is raw, uncut, unedited. And it's broadcasting right now as Mark and I are talking. So any of the mistakes that happen will not be edited. Not that we do that anyways. But but this is just raw today. I mean, you know, enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're not going to pull any Howard Stern moves. It is not serious radio where we do this in an effort to swear and be vulgar. We are doing this because we have live callers today. So on our live call-in show, we take in your questions, and live callers get priority. We've got several in the queue already. Annika, behind the scenes, she will be coming out and talking to you for a moment and just getting your name and where you're from. Please, also, folks, don't be frustrated if we don't get to your email question or you to your call-in line. We hope to. I don't think we'll be able to do it all, and we'll try and reply to a few questions online. But anyway, just want to say thank you and for your patience.
Yeah, and for those of you who sent in your question and they were like three questions in one, you know, you're going for a triple play of sorts, I appreciate your ambition. We might only hit one or two as we're trying to get to everyone's questions here. And of course, no, you know, you can call us in the law firm or accounting firm. We're happy to consult you on your tax and legal issues and planning. But we're going to try and pick out questions we feel will be applicable to everyone here. So it'll be helpful and educational and maybe even entertaining a little bit. We'll see. You judge that later on, though.
Yes, and if you're a new listener and wondering who are these guys all about, our regular show has a lot better audio quality, and we have special guests, a tax tip and a legal tip each week, some little jingles here and there, so we try to keep it professional. We want to be your podcast that you listen to for tax and legal advice, you know, kind of an accountant-lawyer-type combo here, and we're hoping that you find it helpful, and welcome. Get over to Refresh Your Wealth. If you'd like, refreshyourwealth.com to sign up for our weekly newsletter. It's free, and of course, our podcast is out there trying to provide value to you as well. So, good stuff.
Yes. Now, can I bring up today's sponsor of the show, Mark?
Yes. We have a sponsor? Man, we are big. Big. Who did you
today's sponsor.
talking to this.
Today's sponsor is the Self-Directed IRA Summit, brought to you by yours truly and Mark Kohler. I just felt like I should, you know, mention this today. The Self-Directed IRA Summit has been set. If you've been following our newsletter, of course, you got the announcements, but it's August 4th in sunny Southern California at the Hotel Irvine. We did it there last year also. So Saturday, August 4th, full day of intensive self-directed IRA training. We've got a bunch of IRA questions in the queue today. We'll hit some of those. But go to sdirasummit.com, sdirasummit.com. It really is the one event to attend on self-directed IRAs. We get past the, you know, the 1 hour or 2 hour presentation you may have heard or a webinar you may have seen on the topic. We get into the nitty-gritty on what people are actually doing and some of the cool strategies and things to know.
Well, I was hoping for a Geico sponsor or, you know, some big Fortune 500 sponsorship.
I know.
I guess not.
That's next week. That's next week. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Matt. Well, okay. Well, folks, we got to dive right into it. We've got an hour with you. We're going to hit it. I know Matt's fielded. He's got some email questions to him. We also have some live callers. Let's just hit a couple base hits with some email questions as we fine-tune our callers, make sure they're in the queue. So, Matt, you got a question for us?
I do. This came in from Jolly. I don't know if that's your real name or this is, you know, your undercover legal name here. And by the way, feel free to give us your pen name, your rap name, whatever it may be, and your questions if you want to remain anonymous. But this is from Jolly. So they have a simple tax question. My husband and I live in Texas. We have a Wyoming LLC to invest passively in syndication deals, apartments, land developments, et cetera. Some of our deals are located in states that require state income tax, Tennessee, Georgia, Kansas. Every year, our Wyoming LLC receives K-1s from the syndication LLCs, and we file 1065 and issue K-1s to us. Since LLC is a pass-through entity, do we file a personal, non-resident state income tax return in the states that our Wyoming LLC is a passive member? Yes, this is a great question. They're specifically referring to Tennessee, Georgia, and Kansas. Yes. Now, I know, Johnny, you've been living in the Lone Star State of Texas. Is that what it is, the Lone Star State? You're living in the great state of Texas, no state income tax. You're, like, loving that. And now you go invest into deals in states that charge state income tax. Yes, sorry, these things are trickling through on these K-1s down to you personally eventually, which means you do personally need to go into those states that do have a state income tax and file those non-resident state income tax returns. Sorry to bum you out, but just imagine if you had to claim all of your income in the state of Texas on a tax return. Just think. Just, you know, pat yourself on the back for not having to do that at least.
Yeah. Thank your lucky stars. Get it? Lone Star State?
Lone Star? Oh, I see what you did there.
Is it the Lone Star State?
You know, I think it is.
I think it is. You know, and, well, there's a star on the Cowboys, you know, uniform, helmet. So, you know, so thank your lucky stars you don't pay state tax in Texas. But if you do business in other states, you got to pay to play, baby. So if you go do a deal in Kansas, even if with a Wyoming LLC or a Texas LLC, you just made money in Kansas. And the Kansas governor doesn't want you to poach deals in their state without paying your fair share of state tax. Now, your accountant should be familiar with this. If they don't, get a new accountant. But it's not the end of the world. Usually we charge around $100, $150 to do a state tax return in conjunction with your personal return wherever you're from. So it's not going to be the end of the world. Okay, now, one quick disclaimer here. Oh, Matt, you want to add something else to that? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, let's say you lived in a state, say Arizona, that actually had a state income tax. Just so you know, you're not getting double state tax there. If you did pay, end up paying in Kansas and you live in a state like Arizona that also has an income tax, you get a credit for any state tax you paid in Kansas for the income you made there when you're filing back in Arizona. Now, you, Jolly, in Texas, you don't need to worry about that because Texas isn't charging income tax. But just want to throw that out there for others listening that may be curious if where they get double taxed again paying in their home state if your home state has an income tax. You don't. You get the credit for what you paid in the out-of-state place you made the money.
Okay, fair enough. That was a nice rider to my comment. I will allow that. So, Matt Sorensen, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, now here's a little more protocol for our call today. For anybody that's calling in live, the phone number is 646-668-8326. That's 646-668-8326. When you get on the line, press number 1, and then we'll know that you have a question. We'll get a little ping, and Annika Frost, our marketing director, she'll come on with you and get your name and where you're from. And if we get to you, great. If we don't, please don't be frustrated. We are so grateful for you, our listeners, and we're trying to really hopefully provide amazing content and a variety of questions and answers that will help all of you in some form or fashion. So we're going to jump over to another Texas caller. I don't know what's going on. We got some Texas listeners today. So this is Debbie in Texas. So Debbie, are you there? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Hey, Matt. And I'm Debbie from Dallas again. I've called a couple times before, and I'm actually in Colombia right now, so hello from Colombia. But hey, Mark and Matt. My question is
Thanks for calling in again.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course. I love you guys. So, yeah, my question is for my sister. So she just left her company after 10 years, and she has – right now she doesn't have a job. She's going to take a sabbatical and for a couple months or so. And then what she has is she wants to know what should she do with her 401k. Should she, you know, do a self-directed IRA, or where should she put it? And also what should she get for medical as well? She does have a lot of medical bills. So, yes, while she doesn't have a job, basically the question will be, what should she do with her 401k and all and some of her cash savings as well?
Oof.
Wow. Well, okay, Debbie, we're going to take that off the line so that it's a little – since it is already – a ghetto recording it as is, so we don't have your background noise. But Debbie, thank you so much for calling in, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, good question.
So Matt, this is right up your alley. She brought up the 401k IRA topic. Jeez.
Yeah.
I hope we get at least a few questions in before we get to IRAs. Okay.
See, that's why the Self-Directed IRA Summit sponsors this show, is because of the quality of the Self-Directed IRA questions.
Yes.
All right. Well. If your, you know, sister's leaving the employment, she is able to roll over the 401k, which most people would do, and what I'd recommend is to an IRA. Now, should she go self-directed is another question. The reason I'd say just go to an IRA is because your fees are going to be lower, you'll get more control of it, you can pick who you want to work with. You'd be shocked at how much fees you're charged on your 401k account when you leave it with your employer, even while you're still working there. The average fee is 1.5% to 2% on your 401k. That means if you got a $100,000 401k account with an employer, you're actually getting fee about $1,500 a year on that account, and you don't even know it because it doesn't even show up. It's like a death of a thousand cuts. It just like nicks at you on your statement when you see these transaction fees and everything of a dollar or 50 cents. And so you got to be careful on that. Going to an IRA is much cheaper. You don't get hit those. You're usually charged flat fees, maybe commissions on buying and selling stuff. So it's, even if you're not self-directing, you're going to save money typically in terms of fees rolling to an IRA. Now, if you have opportunity or your sister's like, I want to get into real estate, or I'm more interested in, you know, physical or hard assets like real estate, or maybe even a small business or a startup or whatever it may be, I don't care, cryptocurrency, then you're thinking about a self-directed IRA. But self-directed IRAs aren't for everybody. You know, if she's like, I don't know anything about real estate, I don't know anything about precious metals, I don't know anything about cryptocurrency or startups, or I have no idea, then maybe slow down, understand what you want to invest in first, and then decide whether a self-directed IRA is right. So I'd kind of go through that thought process, at least in terms of deciding whether to do a self-directed IRA or not.
Yeah, and Debbie, the big takeaway here is tell your sister to call into the freaking show, you know? You don't have to do this work for her, you know? She can pony up, you know? So
That's right. That's right.
We might gain another listener. We might go from – yeah. We're going to go from 7 listeners to 8 listeners. We need her. So
yeah, right. we need her. What about the health care, though, Mark? She asked about – what do you do about her health care now that she's not going to be at the employer anymore?
Oh,
you want
man.
To hit those thoughts
huge.
There? I mean, that's a big topic.
You know, why does – she didn't even call in. Her sister called in and she wants a twofer. I'm going to have to veto. I'm going to veto the second part of that question, Debbie. I would say this, though. Have her go read the chapter on health care in my tax and legal playbook, and she needs to look at getting her own plan and maybe even an HSA qualifying plan. So that just opens the door there. She really needs to get a consult with a good tax person for 20, 30 minutes to talk about health care and what to do. I just had a call yesterday with a client on this very topic out of Wisconsin and trying to get to the bottom of that. Okay, I'm going to do an email question, then we'll go back to the phones. We're going to try to knock out questions quickly here, folks, because there's a little takeaway for everybody. This is from Kevin. He says, is it worth deducting depreciation from my rental properties even if I'm going to end up paying AMT? That's the alternative minimum tax. My rental business shows a loss after depreciation, but I don't think I gain anything from it as my LLC income / loss flows through to my personal return on which I will pay AMT. All right. Now, this is good for everybody out there. If you own a rental property, I'm going to do a couple corrections here in a nice way to Kevin. First of all, under the new Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, there was major changes to AMT. Far, far fewer people are going to be affected by AMT. So, Kevin, don't assume you're going to pay AMT this coming year in 2018 when you go to file in 2019. So, first point. Second point is, everybody, the IRS is going to calculate depreciation on your rental property when you go to sell it and call it depreciation recapture anyway. So even if you don't take it, the IRS is going to calculate it when you go to sell the property. And my third point here is, people, if you have a rental property, take depreciation. It goes into a carry forward loss bucket. It's going to work out anyway. You can use that loss upon the sale of any rental property, and you may not even pay AMT anyway. And you get into the active and real estate professional classification and all that. I want to give people extra places to and resources, but I have a whole chapter on the benefits of rental property in my tax and legal playbook and in my new book, The Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom, on why you should buy rental property and take advantage of these options. So, Kevin, don't give up on it. Take those write-offs. And any of you listening today have rental property, don't think you should avoid depreciation. Grab it, take it. It's a freebie, and it should pay off. So hang in there. Matt, should we go to the phones, or do you have an email you want to hit quickly?
I got one here, and we can hit the phones. This is from Kushal, who wrote in, I am a California resident, and I own multiple rental properties out of state, Missouri, Tennessee. I'm considering asset protection. However, the potential costs and complexity of LLC's bank accounts concern me. My understanding is that irrespective of where the LLC is created, the LLC needs to be registered in California, which is a cost of $850 annually. As the next best alternative, can I create a land trust for each of my properties and have them report to a parent master land trust instead of an LLC? I also have an umbrella insurance. I'm thinking about that between these two. I'd have reasonable asset protection while keeping my life simple. What do you think? All right. Now, this is the classic California question, all right? This is like, do I get a double-double or a, you know, double single? This is kind of like some of these California questions you have to know when you live in California, okay? So let me give you the bad news, the good news, and what we probably do here. The bad news is, you're right, California is going to try and come after you for $800. They don't care if you have a Missouri LLC with a Missouri rental property and a Missouri property manager. To the Franchise Tax Board, if you're in California and you make a phone call to your property manager in Missouri, they're like, that Missouri LLC just did business in California. You need to register in California and pay us $800 a year. So if you're like, you know, sitting on the toilet thinking about your rental property in Missouri, you just did business in California, all right? And the Franchise Tax Board wants to charge you $800.
Matt, you just did your business in two different ways in California.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, I
that
in there.
Just like
snuck
that
in there.
Terrible. Yeah, that was nice. You're doing your business in California.
That's
even,
right.
Under your LLC. Okay, we'll get
That's
to the point here.
Tax
land trust. Yeah, the franchise
land
tax board is going to kill you.
Okay, franchise tax board is going to kill you. Now, there's people that are like, well, am I really doing business? Am I not? You know, you got to be careful on that. Get a consult into what you're specifically doing. Know the California Franchise Tax Board's after you, though. They're very aggressive on that. So, now the land trust. Don't do it. Total sham.
They don't make sense.
They don't work. The land trust has no asset protection. They can go right through the trust down to the beneficial owner yourself. You might as well not even waste the money or time doing a land trust for asset protection on a rental. Now, sure, umbrella is great. You know, umbrella insurance is just additional insurance on top of insurance you already have. It doesn't cover anything new. Sure, you could do that. But here's what I would say about the LLC cost. Think about what you're paying for umbrella insurance. I don't know what that's costing you. If you're paying $800 a year for the LLC, that's $66 a month. Is that what your umbrella insurance is costing you? Your umbrella insurance has a cap on it. The LLC protection is unlimited. So if you have a $2 million lawsuit that happens on the LLC for your rental, they're stuck at the LLC. They can't come down to you personally, even if it goes past $1 million or $2 million or whatever. So just take that into consideration as you're considering this asset protection. But don't think the land trust is your easy solution. It doesn't work. It's really not asset protection.
It isn't. And watch out for anybody trying to sell you a land trust, people. Again, I have a chapter in my book called Land Trust Savior or Snake Oil. And that's in my Lawyers or Liars that you can get on Kindle. Just people, watch out. And here's the thing. If you live in California and you're going to buy rental property in another state, it's going to cost you $66 a month. Just that's what it is. So I hate to tell you, That's where we're going to go. You're going to have to get an LLC, and you could try to hide out from California. There are some sneaky ways to maybe pull that off. Get a consult with us. Hopefully we set up your Missouri LLC, and then we can talk about it during that process. It's included with the setup of an LLC. Okay, we're going to go to Chicago. We've got Asher on the line. So Asher, Chicago, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for calling in, man. What can we do for you?
Okay, so I am currently in Chicago at the moment. I am thinking about moving to California and looking into the cannabis business. So I was wondering, does your firm do taxes for a cannabis company?
You bet. Okay, so let's talk about that. I'm going to drop you from the – not. I'm just going to mute you here for a moment, Asher, as we take your question offline. So stay on the line with us. Don't hang up. Don't hang up. So Asher is thinking about moving to California. Obviously, he was not listening to the last caller who is bemoaning the fact they live in California because, Asher,
right.
Chicago's expensive. Yeah, California's worse. So you better live near the ocean and enjoy that aspect of California or some –
But you can smoke weed in California, and you can sell it in California.
That's true. I guess Asher found that one golden nugget of California. Now.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you need to chill out after you've paid all those taxes to California.
That's right. There's no gold rush. It's a marijuana rush. So let's get out to California and help with that. So anyway, so Asher, to answer your question, we as a law firm do help consult clients through pitfalls of opening up a marijuana dispensary. We can help point you in the right direction. We do not hold ourselves out as cannabis attorneys. There are those that have really branded themselves in California for that. I would probably recommend you go that route. We can help with the business and tax planning aspects of it because you're going to have some issues. Our accounting firm, however, we're not doing tax returns for clients in the cannabis industry. There's still exposure there. The federal government is not recognizing the cannabis industry and the tax write-offs that go with it. There's some weird exposure items. A lot of CPAs are nervous to touch those returns. So anyway, clients are making money. Get out there. I would focus on a cannabis specialist law firm if you're really going to open a dispensary and you're worried about all the ifs, ands, wheres, and buts. Matt, your thoughts?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, very true. And yeah, a lot of the states like California, you know, you have to go get a license and a permit, and that's, you know, that's a process even in and of itself. And getting attorneys that are really working in that area is really, really important. So just like, you know, for us in our asset protection, tax planning, self-directed IRA planning, where we specialize, I think you're better served getting someone that is, you know, doing that for clients on a daily basis. And it's a growing and still a field. Even those attorneys are not going to have concrete answers for. You just have to know that when you're in something like, you know, a cannabis business or cryptocurrency or some of these new things that our government, frankly, is trying to figure out how to actually regulate it and what they're going to actually do.
All right. Well, I like it. Great comment, Matt. Now, we take calls where we have a name and a location that these folks are from. There, sometimes we get some unique calls, and so we're going to see how this goes. I'll drop it quickly if needs be here, so be patient, folks. This is live radio. But we have a caller now from San Diego, but calling in from Pakistan, is that right? We've got a foreign caller, which is common, but I don't think we've had a caller from the Middle East. Brute, are you there? Is this for real? What's up?
Yeah, this is Brett.
Oh, Brett. Okay, sorry, there was a typo there. I thought it was Brett. So,
okay.
Tax and legal question for Matt and I. Is this legit? What's going on?
Oh yeah, I'm on a military contract right now. I reside in San Diego. I've gone through Kyle Allen for the past couple of years. He's done a fantastic job.
Okay, cool.
Doing my LLC work.
Wow. Well, so thank you. And you're literally calling us from Pakistan right now.
I am. I'm on my Skype line calling you guys right now live.
Wow.
Cool. Man, we've gone. This is a big deal for us, Brett. Thanks so much. Take us to a whole new level.
Now,
this is great. Well, thank you, sir. Okay, so what's your question for us? What's up?
Okay, so I'm working for a military company, and over here on the contract, all of a sudden we started getting taxed for per diem, and in the fact that we had to pay taxes on paying for our flights through a corporate credit card, even though, you know, we use a credit card, pay for the flight, we put in an expense report, we get paid for that, we're getting taxed on that. So they said, okay, you know, we went through quite a hit on the first paycheck with that, where it wasn't even making sense to be in here. So they said, okay, we'll set you up on a tax gross-up program. And first of all, they didn't even give us the tax code that justified this tax in the first place. They gave us a pamphlet on what was related to IRS employees. I'm not an IRS employee. And the only response was, well, this tax code is really buried in the IRS code. I tried calling the IRS, and they didn't even answer the phone anymore. So here I am with a W-2 that tells me I made $117,000 in 7 months when I only made $89,000. So that kicked up my tax base for my California taxes to over $5,600, plus a report to Social Security at a higher base too, where I'm paying more Social Security and false data going to the Social Security Department. So, you know, I just wrote an email to HR about this because they kept us in the dark the entire year of how much we actually made. And then they, in my view, they falsified the W-2 form that said we made so much money, but a lot of that money was, you know, pretty much fudged around in the paycheck, and they were paying the tax on, you know, on the per diem and the travel fees or travel costs.
All right.
So,
Okay. Well, this is great, and it's a good reason why we don't take calls from Pakistan. We're not going to do this ever again. Geez, you want? What do you want? World peace too? Gosh, you're killing us. Okay. this is good. Well, let me throw out a
one
couple.
One part of time.
And yeah. Now the. Obviously, this is a technical question. I want to throw out a couple thoughts, and then we'll move on here. And I apologize that we could probably take a good entire show on military pay and issues and strategies related to it. And I think we've talked about it on the show in the past, but it is a big topic. I would say, if you haven't already, get into publication number 3. I know that, believe it or not, it's one of the first publications by the IRS. It's publication number 3 on gross pay, excluded income, what's included in income. And they go through some of the issues related to there's a whole section on in-kind military benefits and travel allowances and what's covered and what's not. So get into publication 3. You probably have already. And then your accountant that does your tax returns – really needs to get in the mix with you, and I would do a consultation with them. We do have one of our accountants in our accounting firm, Rick Taylor, who's kind of our international. He does expat-type returns for our clients that are living abroad but are U.S. citizens, and he might have some important thoughts on this. So regrettably, I can't answer it specifically for you today. I'm sure you probably envisioned that. But I'd start with Pub 2, do a little reading there, and then get a consult with an accountant that understands military wage income, and maybe there's some ways around it. So if that's a reasonable answer, does that work okay for you?
Okay. And yeah, one thing, too, I did push out the email with the questions to the HR department. And I also copied Kyle Allen and asked him, you know,
oh,
I said,
good.
I'm seeing you guys, but I don't expect, there's no task here. I'm just an FYI for you. If you could please forward this to Mark, I don't know if you had done that or not, but I've got all the information in the email already that can be forwarded to you if you contact Kyle. And then we can start an orderly process on trying to resolve this. For me, I'd gladly pay you guys for your services because, honestly, this has really got me upset, not at you guys, but at the company, the way they handled the whole program. That, first of all, they set this up wrong as far as the exempt portion of this, and right in the middle of the contract, they're like, okay, we screwed this up, and they had to rewrite some additions to the contract. We had to re-sign the contract a couple times to get so they got this straight. But in the meantime, you know, here's a big surprise of, oh, by the way, you have to pay taxes on travel expenses and per diem. I'm like, never heard of this before. And actually reading the tax code, there's tax code that that you could travel in the United States, that there is a possibility you may have to pay taxes on that too. So I know I'm taking a long time, and I just want to throw it out there with you guys.
Well, no, thank you, Brett, for calling. And Kyle Allen, for those that are new to the show, Kyle Allen is one of our CPAs in the accounting firm that's fantastic. I think he's come on the show and shared a tip before, too. Brett, I'll take this call, the rest of this offline, but thank you so much for calling in, and I hope you can listen to the rest of the show with Skype. It shouldn't cost you anything, so hopefully. But, Kyle, I'll talk to Kyle Allen. I'll have him forward over your info and make sure that he does a little background on this and we get back to you on it. So, Brett, great from hearing from you, and thank you so much for making a call from across the world. Matt, do you have a quick email you want? So we're going to change speeds here, everybody. Thank you. That was deep, but
I got a question from MJ. She says, I have a single entity LLC holding title to a self-directed IRA rental property. So I guess the IRA owns the LLC. LLC has a rental property. What yearly tax filings needs to happen? I was told I do not need to do an IRS return because it's a single entity LLC. That's correct. There's no federal tax return since it's a single member LLC. However, the rental property is rented weekly in Hawaii, has state taxes to pay for hotel, rental income tax, et cetera. What tax filings need to happen? Well, there may still be state and local returns that need to be filed for that. That's very specific to what the activity is. For example, if you're a lot of cities now and states have these nightly or weekly rental taxes, as they've kind of tried to charge fees and raise revenue from the Airbnb or VRBO model. So those you may be subjected to, but that's separate from, you know, any federal requirement. And technically, this is something you should know for anyone doing Airbnb or VRBO type rental properties, is whether you own them in an entity or not. In most cities now, or I shouldn't say most, in many cities and states, you actually have a tax that you have to pay, kind of like when you check into a hotel, you get this line item hotel tax, you know. You're actually supposed to be charging that and paying your local city when you collect it. So so this is something not only should you be filing and paying, but you should charge your customer for that. And a lot of the sites like Airbnb, VRBO have options where you can collect that and will automatically assess it when you rent the rooms and charge the fees. So so look for that. But then there is, as MJ's pointing out, there is actually a local filing you need to file to declare the fees due and then to make payment from the LLC in your situation. So I can't give you a specific form or anything. It's very state or city specific, but it is something you'll want to look up, whatever city or state you have a weekly or nightly rental that you're renting out.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. Awesome. And I was just going to go over to Mario in Salt Lake City. It looks like we lost them. So we're going to go back over to Jamie in Utah here in just a moment. Let me take a quick question here that's easy. We want to hit these little base hits and get a lot of info out there. This is Diego that says, I've got a 7-year-old abandoned corporation that was never used. Should I try to revive it or should I just start a new one? Great question, Diego. Easy answer. Start a new one. You do not want to revive a corporation that has not filed taxes for 7 years. The biggest problem is you haven't filed tax returns for this corporation, and the IRS is going to want all of them. There's going to be penalties and interest for not doing them. And then also most states, they'll let you revive a corporation that might be 6 months to a year or two old, but it's another problem or challenge to try to get a state to recognize it that year that old as well. So anyway, great question, Diego. Okay, so Jamie, no question from Jamie? Okay, all right. Sorry, Jamie, I thought you had a question, so I'm going to pass. Let's jump over to MJ in Newport Beach. So MJ, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's MJ on location, and you are so right. I am looking at the ocean right now, so if you have to pay these hefty taxes, you might as well enjoy the view. I just love you guys. I can't tell you how difficult it is to try to find help in the self-directed IRA market. I mean, I'm just so grateful for Matt and Mark's help. you know, advising me whether to get an LLC. And it's actually inspired me. I've been doing renovations for 30 years. I took my entire IRA. I would advise that to everyone. And I invested in renovations on location all over, like Aspen and Maui. I'm the girl you just talked about in Maui. And I have a new one starting in Naples. So I love training people now. I teach them how to invest their IRA and retirement accounts. I call it renovation on location. So thank you for my new life and my exciting new job that I have, teaching other people doing what I do. So the cool thing is,
you
answered my question about the state taxes. My question is, when I have a property that is an LLC, I know it's protected to a certain extent, but I just recently bought something outside of an IRA, and I called you guys, and you were great help for me, and I put it into my own personal name. So my question is, you know, it's easy when you have a property in your own personal name. When you're selling it, you just deduct all of your expenses and you take the capital gains tax off. You know, you are taxed less on the sale. But when you have an IRA, a self-directed IRA, all those, you know, expenses I have going and helping and looking at the property or getting my contractors lined up, I have a property manager manage it. So I stay, you know, arm's length away from my self-directed IRA property. Mm-hmm. But how do I expense those expenses I can't take on a yearly basis right now? How do I take that off the bottom line of the IRA when I'm cashing out?
Well, the thing is, the IRA doesn't pay tax on the gain when you sell, so there's nothing to expense anyways. You know, so if you sold it for a loss, you sold it for a big gain, a little gain, what expenses you had or that the IRA should have been paying and had, those are not deductible because there's no tax paid anyways. So you can track it. You want to track it for good record-keeping purposes, but it's not something that you'd be able to expense against any income the IRA has because it doesn't pay tax, and you can't take it personally either.
Now, Matt,
I'm unable to travel to my locations and deduct my travel. I can't even deduct that. So
nope, can't even
when
do
I'm,
that.
When I'm traveling. Okay.
For the IRA.
Two comments. Can I throw this out? Can you guys hear me all right?
I can.
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. Let me throw this out. Sorry, I'm trying to interject here, and I felt bad. I apologize, but let me throw
this
out.
We were just talking right over
comments.
You.
I know, and the math's so smart, too, but I want to interject on this point. First of all, the easy stuff here is if your IRA owns a property and you're going to travel to it and check on it, you do not get to deduct that travel expense because it's not you doing business. It's your IRA, and that would be prohibited to try to take a write-off to just go check on that IRA property. So in general, that's not going to be a write-off, regrettably. Now, if you own some of your own rentals in your own names and you're traveling over there and rehabbing on location, freaking love it, great write-off. But Matt, one of my questions here would be is, you do want to track those expenses if you're going to have UBIT tax, or UDFI. Because if you're going to pay UDFI taxes, you do want all those expenses to minimize that, right? No?
Absolutely, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So
what
if you've leveraged it with debt. Yeah, it's if you've leveraged – it's Chapter 15 in my book. Check it out. But the UDFI occurs if you ever leverage the property with debt. So if you're using the cash from the retirement account, you don't need to worry about it. But if you're getting a non-recourse loan or debt on the property, then that's where UDFI comes in. It's a tax that the IRS will essentially charge the IRA. Now, if you run into that, as Mark is saying here, then your expenses for the property the IRA is paying, you'd use those expenses to offset that taxable income.
Okay, brilliant. Well, I'm going to see you August 4th in Irvine. I'm going to your big summit, and I'm going to learn so much and pass it on to my clients. So thank you so much for teaching me.
Excellent. You bet.
Oh, and MJ, thank you. These are complicated questions, and it's hard on a radio show to do them justice too. So you're very gracious to – I know that there are some easy follow-up and questions that you're passing on right now, and that's generous of you because we want to cover as much as we can. But yeah, check out Matt's chapter on that. Matt, what chapter is that on UDFI again?
It's chapter 15.
Yeah, and I would say that's the only time you really want to track those expenses, MJ. So hopefully that'll
thank you.
Help provide
thank you.
Some
I pay all
too.
Cash for the property, so thank you for the invite. Thank you.
Ah, there you go. Okay, cool. All right, thanks, MJ. All right, we're going to jump over to another quick question here, and then we're going to go over to Jamie in Salt Lake. We have that technical situation resolved. So this is Brian. out in Pennsylvania. He says, in a Facebook tax post recently, Mark, you said you can deduct the interest on your auto loan, even if you're just claiming mileage, not actual. Is that true? The interest is still deductible? Can you expand on this? How is the interest deduction calculated? Is it a percentage of business miles versus total miles? So everybody out there, your interest on your auto loan is always a deduction, even if you're doing mileage or actual, because you had to borrow money to buy the auto, so the interest on that auto loan is a deduction. A lot of accountants miss that. Boy, it was a few years ago when we figured it out, and we wanted to make sure we weren't missing it for our clients, so we asked them if they do have an auto loan, what's the interest they paid during the year? Then the question is, how much of that interest is deductible? And it is a ratio of how many business miles versus total miles. So if you had total miles of 20,000 and during the year and 15,000 of those miles were business, then you could deduct 75% of the interest you paid during the year plus 15,000 miles times the mileage amount, depending on what year you're doing your tax return. So, Brian, great question. And everybody, that's a little tip there that hopefully saves you a few bucks. Matt, I'm going to go to Jamie in Utah. So, Jamie, thanks for your patience, and welcome to the show. What do you got for us?
Thank you. How do you, or what is involved in setting up a family management company?
Ooh, I like it.
Ooh, good
okay.
question.
Well, we'll take the, we'll jump off. Let me ask this first too, Jamie. How old are your kids that we're going to create slave labor out of?
This is actually for a client of mine, and they are 15, and I believe the other one is 10.
Nice.
Perfect ages for this. This is great. Okay, I'm going to take this off the line. And, Jamie, great question. Matt, do you want to go ahead? I've been talking.
Yeah, let me say, how do you create the family management company? Well, this is going to be something you're typically going to throw on Schedule C on the tax return. You want to go set up a separate bank account. Like I have mine, it's called Sorensen Family Management. It's a pretty exciting name. And but we dedicate this bank account to it. And then obviously I will transfer money over from my S Corporation. I'm just giving you a perfect example here. So from my business where I'm generating the income, that's like an S Corp, for example, I'll transfer over money to the family management company, and it goes to that bank account. That gets recognized as income on the family management company's books. And then I pay out my kids by transferring money from the family management bank account to the kids' bank accounts. They need to have those accounts. And there's certain limits, Mark. I'll let you throw in on those. But I think that this is a great strategy, by the way, because if you look at me, I'm paying tax at a higher rate. My kids would be paying at zero. And by paying it through the family management company, let's say I do $10,000. I pay each kid $5,000 each. I take a $10,000 expense if I'm in a 30% tax bracket. I've just saved $3,000 in tax. Now my kids are going to each get $5,000 of income. Let's say that the 15-year-old and 10-year-old here, or in your example, they each get $5,000 of income. Well, they don't need to file a tax return because they're below the standard deduction. They don't need to claim it. There's no income tax they're going to pay on it. There's an exemption for family-run companies where you don't have to do any of the withholding or pay into Medicare or Social Security. So it's a great, great strategy. Get the kids involved in the business. My kids come in over the summer. They help clean the office. They do other things. And my oldest does bookkeeping for me. It's a great way to get the kids involved in the business also. And you get to save some money from having to save it to the IRS. So.
Yeah, Matt.
Everybody with kids. If you have a business and you have kids, you've got to be doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's got to be legit, and you can't pay a five-year-old, $5,000. But you can start matriculating the kids into the business and start paying them something, and it starts creating write-offs early on. And then as they get older and older, the benefits get better. I will just say, I'm going to rephrase the question and answer in one other way. And when Jamie says, how do you create a family management company? It's not an LLC. It's not a corporation. Generally, you can get around not even filing a DBA or a doing business as. You're going to use your Social Security number, and you're just going to walk into the bank. And by creating the bank account, you have created the management company. So it's that easy. There's no filing fees. There's no blah, blah, blah. It's just walk into the bank, and the 19-year-old across the desk from you, you're going to just tell them, I want a sole proprietorship. don't say the freaking family management company name or word. They're going to freak out, call their manager, and, you know, the bank you know, going to probably explode out the back. So remember,
they don't have a form for that. They don't have a form for that.
No.
So it's not going to go over well.
So this is a sole proprietorship. That's it. Just freaking walk in and keep it simple. Anyway, so there you go. Easy schmeasy. Okay, we're going to let me take a quick email question that's fast, and then we'll jump over to Winnie in North Carolina.
I got one here, too. So, let me know when you're ready. I mean, you're dominating all the questions here, but that's cool. That's cool.
Mark Kohler. I'm glad. You know, that's how relationships work. They communicate. So if you told me that, I feel bad. I'm just trying to drive the show, man. I'm trying to drive the car.
This is the battered spouse syndrome. You know, I just can't take it anymore. Then I just explode. But
you got to tell me how you feel, bud. I'm liking it. This is good. Therapy.
Therapy.
Yeah, we do. Okay, so this is Robert, and this is a fast one. So then we'll jump over to your question, Matt. Thanks. Robert when you file an extension, so I'm presuming a personal extension for your tax return, he's filed an extension so he didn't have to file by April 15th. He says, do you have to wait until October, or can we file anytime between now and if we are ready? Easy schmeasy, Robert. You can file anytime you want. You can file an extension on April 15th and then file your tax return on April 20th. Or you can wait until the last minute on October of like 15th, like Matt Sorensen and Mark Kohler. So you can do whatever you want. You can file sooner than later if you'd like, as soon as you're ready to go.
I'm more of a 12th, 13th kind of guy. I like to come in, cut it close, but not too close. That's just how I do it.
I like it.
Let me get in Patrick's question here, if I may.
Okay.
So Patrick wrote in, he says, I'm a self-employed U.S. citizen doing consulting work with a U.S. company, living and working overseas 100% of the time. I do get paid into a U.S. bank account. If my tax strategy includes setting up an S-Corp, what should I be thinking about? I don't intend to be physically present in the U.S., pros and cons to be aware of. Okay, this is a great question, Patrick. Let me say there's kind of two parts to this, really. There's a federal tax issue and then maybe a state tax issue we could look at. But from a federal standpoint, I just want to – people that are U.S. citizens living abroad and you're making money from a U.S.-based company, they're going to 1099 you, right? And even if they don't, frankly – any income you make anywhere in the world, I don't care where you're sitting, if you're on the beach in the Bahamas or wherever, whatever great place you may be, you're paying federal income tax on that money. So, but we would recommend the S-Corp generally for a consulting client, which you're talking about. This will help save you on self-employment tax. But one thing to think about is where your state residency is. This might be something, I don't know where this company is that's paying you, but maybe establishing your state of residence before you get overseas or trying to reestablish a state of residence that has no state income tax could be beneficial and a planning thing to consider in your scenario because you're living and working overseas, but you're still going to have a state of residence likely. A state's going to still try and claim you as a resident of their state, so you may want to make that consideration. Anything else you can think of, Mark, on this?
No, and I actually, while we're on the call here, I am researching this because this is a really good question. The Matt's exactly right. You're going to pay federal income tax on income earned abroad. But the question is, do you pay self-employment tax on income earned abroad? Now, my gut feeling is yes, but you might want to look at if there's any exclusions, and I just started to research this. I've never even written an article on this. In U.S., it's called expats, United States expats, where you live out of the U.S., but you're a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
There's a whole array of tax strategies you need to be aware of, exclusions from income, standard deductions, self-employment tax, and so I might take the fifth on a little bit of that. I think that's a great question, and you definitely want to have – kind of that expat strategy down. So tough question. Good one, Matt.
Yeah. Something we could research if you need to, at least on the self-employment tax side. But for federal, regular federal income tax,
yes.
You're sunk there. Maybe I'll just look at the state issue I mentioned, too, of where you're considered a state resident of for state income tax purposes, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Well, Matt, do you feel better now? You got that question off your chest.
I feel better.
Can we get back to the show now?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Just want to make sure.
We're like a couple fighting over the remote, you know? What show are we going to watch tonight?
Yeah,
all right,
true.
You have the remote now.
You know, we've worked through a lot of these issues. We forgive and forget. Sticks and stones. It's all good. Okay,
true.
So this is Winnie in North Carolina. Now, Winnie, I have to say, welcome to the show, but I don't know where Beach fits into this. I see Winnie Beach. Are you calling from Winnie Beach? Is your last name Beach? Help me out, Winnie.
My last name is Beach.
Oh, cool.
Do you live by a beach, too?
No, I don't.
Okay.
So you're
worth a shot.
But there's
worth
a lot
a shot.
Of yeah, there's a lot of beaches in North Carolina, though, right?
There are gorgeous beaches in North Carolina, and I recommend lots of them. So come and see us.
I gotta come. You are awesome. Thanks for letting me joke around with you. Well, what do you have for us today? You've been so patient here on the show too.
I have a question about the new tax law and rental real estate. Schedule E rental real estate, is that going to qualify for the 20% business deduction if there's a profit?
Winnie, you are a boof. You know, just yesterday, I'm traveling to Seattle. I'm going to do a couple workshops in Seattle, and I'm actually going to be on NBC in Seattle, King 5 on Sunday. And this was one of the questions that the group is having me come out to talk about. So I was stressing about this just yesterday, Winnie, and the answer is yes.
Oh, so you figured it out. That's great.
Well, this is Mark Kohler, you know, so take it for what it's worth. I don't know, figured it out. all right. But, no, this is a great question. And all of our indications show that, yes, the 20% pass-through does apply on profit under a Schedule E. So that would be rental income. Now, I want to say this, too. The caveat is 80% of rental property income or businesses generate the loss because you've got depreciation and all these cool write-offs that come
right.
with real estate. But if you have income, because maybe the mortgage is so far down and maybe
right.
you use cash to buy the property, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Uh-huh.
You get the 20% pass-through on any net income on a Schedule E. So, boom. I think
that's
plan on it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's big news, by the way. I don't know if you realized that. You walked into a big, big topic that was a lot of attorneys, tax attorneys, CPAs, lawmakers had been debating on how this would apply to certain investment income or in this case, the rental real estate. So that's a really important question.
And I will say this, though. Everybody, don't get your hopes up because it does not apply upon the sale of the property. That would be capital gain. So whether it's short-term capital gain or long-term capital gain, you don't get the 20% on the pass-through. But because it's a rental property and it's business income, then the 20% pass-through applies. Whether you have an LLC or not, which you should, but you're going to get it. So, gosh, Winnie, great question.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, and, you know, we're going to say goodbye, but you know what, Matt? I could just keep listening to Winnie because that accent is so – it's adorable, that North Carolina accent. And
It is.
It's so fun to have you call in. Yeah, Brett, you didn't throw down much of an accent in Pakistan for us, but, you know, I'll take a call from North Carolina anytime because that was special. All right, now I promised we would take our live callers. Matt, can I – last time I'll step on your toes. Then you can do it, bring on another question for me.
Live callers get priority. Let's do it.
Yeah. Now, okay, this is Jonathan in Phoenix, Arizona, one of your homies out there in Phoenix
baby.
With Matt Sorensen. All right. Okay, Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Excellent.
So Matt, I actually emailed you. I sent you a screenshot of the review of the podcast, and thank you so much for sending the self-directed IRA book. I'm the Christmas light guy.
Okay, cool. Excellent.
Oh, yeah, man.
Cool.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah. So
cool.
I'm trying to – I opened up an HSA.
I want to say
– obviously
– Well, Jonathan, I want to say thank you for the review and asking for a copy of my book. So I'm not even going to respond to
your
question. I'm oh,
yeah.
Paid for
I got
my
your
book
on Kindle,
okay.
And I'm all right. And I'm holding out. I'm holding out for Matt's new updated self-directed IRA book on Kindle because I actually prefer that as well.
It's
okay.
Close.
Right. Well,
it's like literally being uploaded. So just so you know,
yeah.
Oh, it's close.
You can have Matt's book for free anytime, but if you want to pay for mine, good choice, man. There we go. I like
perfect.
That.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Nice.
There's a question
nice.
In here. Don't let color distract you.
No, yeah, there is a question,
okay.
I promise. And so I just started an HSA account because I have a high deductible plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to get the deduction as much as I can. However, though, I know that you guys have talked about and I've read about that you can make investments within the HSA. You can make investments within the HSA as well, correct?
Sure, absolutely.
Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
You can have an
yeah.
HSA
okay.
with a brokerage account or you can self-direct it. Absolutely.
Right, and so I'm looking for sure in the self-direct option, but
mm-hmm.
I find it that it's going to be difficult for me to really have much cash to invest because the contribution is only, what, $59.50 a year?
Well,
yeah.
Family, yeah, $68.50.
Right,
yeah,
for family,
year, family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my question is,
well,
is there a way that I can make that more?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'm dying to comment here. I'm going to be fast, though. Matt, can I take first
yes.
stab, please? Is
yes,
that okay?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
First of all, okay. I want to say there's we have only one self-directed IRA custodian in the country
yeah.
that allows
you
to self-direct an HSA. Yeah. Send us an email. We'll give you their contact info because that's
oh, perfect.
Step one.
Okay.
Make sure your HSA a custodian that will let you self-direct. Number two, I want to tell you my HSA owns a freaking rental property in Chicagoland. It's South Chicago. I did it with seller financing with a $4,000 down payment. Now, it was,
oh,
it's
fantastic.
A Section
yeah.
8 low-income housing. I bought it for $40,000-$50,000. I put down 10%, which was around $4,000 or $5,000. It cash flows a couple hundred bucks a month. Freaking awesome. I've owned it for 6, 7, 8 years probably, and it's been a great little investment in my HSA. But third, I want to tell you, you've got to listen to our radio show last week. Mark Podolsky's strategies on buying raw land with lower type investment income capital, amazing. And if you can couple that with a self-directed HSA, dude, I think sky's the limit.
Wow. Okay.
There
so raw, I actually never, I've heard of that guy and I've never heard of raw land because I always associate it with like, you know, single or multifamily units, but okay. Perfect.
I know. Check it out. Yeah. He's creating passive income with raw land purchases, and he's doing it for some projects less than $4,000 or less. You got to check it out.
Wow.
Last week's show was amazing.
I will.
Matt was not on the show with me last week, so he missed out. I even told Matt, you got to listen to the show. It was freaking awesome.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was off.
Perfect.
I was off
so that's
doing. Doing work, so what can I say?
Yeah.
I was speaking about self-directed IRAs, actually. So,
yeah.
But
yeah.
But yeah, I would say just a couple of the thoughts too is, even me, I just with my own Roth IRA, because I do a backdoor Roth IRA in addition to maxing out my 401k, which I self-direct. But you know, the first time I was like, man, I can only put $5,500 in a year. Well, after you've done it for 5 or 6 years. Now, I mean, you know, now I've got enough that even I don't need necessarily a $4,000 or $5,000 investment. Now I've got $20,000-$30,000, and it's easier to throw in on things, you know. So think about it, you know, long term. The cool thing about the HSA is you're getting a tax deduction now. You know what I mean? You're getting that now. Set it aside, save it, invest in little things you can. But after 3 or 4 or 5 years, you're going to have a much more easier set of funds to get out and invest. So
yeah.
Hopefully that helps.
Yeah. Great question, Jonathan. Matt, take us out. You got 10 seconds, baby.
Thanks, everybody, for being with us. We will see you next week for another amazing hour of Refresh Your Wealth. Check us out at refreshyourwealth.com.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.